Good morning.
Good to see everyone again. The retreat was last week, so I know that for some of you, I haven't seen some of you for 2 weeks. Others of you who were on the retreat last week, I saw you guys, but it's just felt like a long time. I think even though the retreat was just last week, it feels like it's been a really, really long time. So it's good to be back in church. It's good to be together as a congregation again. And if you have your Bible, if you can turn to Romans chapter 13. We're going through a series where we're looking at Romans 12, Romans 13, Romans 14, and we are really addressing this question of transformation. In general, what the passage has been talking about in chapter 12 and now in chapter 13 is basically what transformation looks like in the individual soul. We've talked about it a little bit in the church, but when we get to chapter 13, one of the things that it addresses is how the gospel can change our state, our society. Our civil government even. And it is a larger, kind of more difficult question, but God's answer is relatively straightforward. Just to kind of admit this to you guys right now, I actually don't have a lot to say today. It's going to be relatively short and relatively straightforward, but I think it's still just as important. I don't know, for our group here today, some of you are working, some of you are still in school, college, graduate school, and then some of you are still in high school. So we're going to have varying ways in which we interact with this issue. But one of the things that I learned very early on in my work career, when I started working in outside of the church, is I learned very quickly that there are certain things that you're not supposed to talk about at work. One of the things you're not supposed to talk about is religion. And so that's one of the things I learned very quickly, even though I work as a pastor. Working in a secular field, I learned there's certain things I'm just not supposed to bring up. Not that they don't come up, but you're just not supposed to bring them up. Second thing that you're not supposed to talk about is politics, and for a lot of really good reasons. This sermon really does address this issue of politics and government in the sense of how are we as Christians supposed to interact or supposed to deal with government, with society, with what's going on in our culture. And if you've been paying attention, there's been a lot of societal, cultural, governmental changes in the last 6 months. The Supreme Court has really wrestled with this issue of gay and lesbian marriage. We've had kind of a whole cultural shift on the transgender, even transracial situation. We've had issues with Confederate flag, with gun laws, with healthcare, with immigration. We're in this really strange period where everything is kind of shifting. And so, again, the question is, what's kind of happening is as things are shifting, more and more people are becoming dissatisfied and even angry with government. Now, we have more division. We have people who split more on very important issues. And that's happening not just on the national level, on the federal level, but state and local. So again, one of the questions I want to wrestle with today is how are we as Christians supposed to respond to that? How do we respond to the changes? How do we respond to the government that is making the changes or going along with whatever changes are happening? How do we live and interact with our society, with our government as believers? So Romans 13 basically addresses that. And just to give you a warning with that too, Romans 13, 1 through 7 is a hard text. And what I mean by that is it's not hard to translate, it's controversial. Matter of fact, I read a couple different things this week as I was getting ready for this, and there are a lot of issues with these seven verses. There are a lot of commentators out there who say, well, this really isn't Paul's writing. We shouldn't take it as gospel. We shouldn't take it as the Apostle Paul because, of this reason, that reason, the other reason. Other people kind of come at it and they say, well, Paul really isn't speaking to every situation. He's just speaking to one. This is a really, really hard, controversial text. But I'll tell you very honestly, it's not controversial because it's hard to understand. It's controversial because people don't like what it says. And so as we go through it today, it is going to feel controversial because the Bible at times does say things that we don't like. It says things that we're not comfortable with, and today's one of those days. It is a narrow text also, just to warn you, and that means it doesn't deal with every situation. So you could listen to this and say, but what if you live under this kind of government? What if you live under these kinds of rulers? What if you live in this situation? This text really doesn't mean to deal with every type of situation. It isn't meant to be a blanket for everything, But it is meant to be a generic answer to the situation most people find themselves in when it comes to dealing with society, dealing with government. So having said that, let me just give you the structure of what we're going to talk about, how we're going to lay out the passage, and then we'll begin to walk through it. I think when you look at these seven verses, Paul essentially lays out when it comes to our interaction with government or with authority, he first tells us the attitude we are to have. He then tells us the actions we should take, and then he tells us the reason why. So first, he tells us the attitude we should have, then the actions we should take, and third, the reason why. So first, the attitude we are to have. We're going to start in verse 1, and this really does permeate the seven verses, so we're not limited to verse 1 in any of these points. But we start in verse 1, and Paul's direction is very clear. He says at the very beginning, he says, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except God, and those that exist have been instituted by God." So we see the attitude that we should have. He says very clearly, "Let every person be subject." Matter of fact, again, he repeats that. You go down to verse 5, and he says, based on all these things that he's talking about, he says, verse 5, "Therefore, one must be in subjection, not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience." So these two different times, he puts these two very, very strong statements together where he's saying that we should have a very particular attitude towards authority, towards government, towards people who are in charge. And that attitude should be one of subjection. Now, subjection, if you want to define it, is basically to put ourselves under the authority of another person. And you can talk about that in a civil sense. You know, there are different spheres that God has put in our lives. So, for instance, one sphere that God has put into our lives is the state, the civil. And so we are to put ourselves under the authority of the state, under the authority of the governing bodies that are over us. Another sphere of life that the Bible tells us about is the church. And in the church, what Paul tells us about the church is that the church is meant to be led by elders, by pastors. And within the sphere of the church, we are to subject ourselves to the leadership, to the direction of the elders and pastors. There's a third sphere in life also, which is family. And in family life, we are to subject ourselves to parents. Now, having said that, there are times where there are exceptions. But again, we're not going to talk about the exceptions. I think it makes it far too complex to talk about exceptions in each one. If you want to know what the exceptions are in each one, you can come and ask me, and I'll start laying some of that out with you. But we just don't have enough time to be able to deal with all of that breadth today in kind of one fashion. But what Paul says in general is very clear. He says that we are to be people who, in our attitude, we place ourselves under the subjection of the governing authority. And again, in a civil sense, that's the governors, presidents, you know, the people who are above us, who are given authority over us in a state sense or in a federal sense. In a church, it's the elders, pastors. In our home, it's our parents. And again, the Bible is rife with that. You know, plenty to say about children subjecting themselves to their parents, plenty to say about church members subjecting themselves to the elders, the pastors. But he's very clear. And it makes us uncomfortable. We don't like the idea of subjection. Now we hear that and we go, isn't that an old concept? Isn't that something that's an ancient thing where, you know, someone had to be the boss and so everyone else had to come under? You know, for Paul, he sees it in the way that things are ordered, in the way things are designed, in the way that God deals with his people. And so again, he's very, very clear about that. No matter how comfortable or uncomfortable you are with that, you have to look at the text and admit that that's what Paul is teaching. No way you can get around that. He says very clearly, he says, "Let every person be subject. You must be in subjection to the governing authorities." And obviously, that is completely countercultural. Basically, the entire history of the country, especially in the 60s, the entire effort of the 60s was to throw off authority, was to disregard authority, disrespect authority, unless you're the one in authority, right? You can disregard it, you can disrespect it, unless you're the one who's really in charge. And what Paul is doing is he's explaining that as a Christian, that really isn't the tack that we should take, that as Christians, we should subject ourselves to whatever authorities are there. Again and again, it's very controversial. The reason why I say that this is an attitude is because Paul doesn't just say that you should act as if you're in subjection, you know, act, listen and say yes and agree and those types of things. At the very end of the passage, he says this. Verse 7, he says, pay to all what is owed to them, taxes to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, respect to whom respect is owed, honor to whom honor is owed. And so what he says is that there is a this idea of subjection is an attitude that we have, that we willfully and joyfully and properly place ourselves under the rule of another. And again, that's a very difficult thing to hear. He says, respect to whom respect is owed, honor to whom honor is owed. Paul has an understanding that whoever is in charge, whatever positions they have, they deserve respect and honor for their positions. And that we as Christians should subject ourselves to them and then treat them properly. You know, that means that as a Christian, Paul calls us to recognize and to honor civil authorities, police, politicians, presidents, even if individually they don't deserve that. And, you know, you and I are wise enough to know that there are plenty of individuals who don't deserve that, who don't deserve respect, who don't deserve, you know, those things. But Paul says, honor them. You know, he says, recognize them because of their function, because of what they're doing. Matter of fact, in other parts of the New Testament, we find out that it becomes our responsibility to pray for them. And that is, sometimes that's a difficult thing to do. My wife and I were talking about how, because we homeschool, we tend to see how some of the families, some of the friends we know are a little bit more conservative than we are, a little bit more conservative than sometimes we're comfortable in. But we've noticed this trajectory happening where more and more, you saw this with George Bush's presidency, you see this with Obama, but you see that our country's more and more divided, where more and more people say, you know, even though this person's been elected, they're not my president. You know, even though George Bush has been elected, he's not my president. Even though Obama's been elected, he's not my president. And what we've been noticing is that even in small ways, people have begun losing the ability to respect someone, you know, for their position. You know, placing themselves under authority. Even Christians who've read Romans 13, who understand what that means. Paul is speaking about this attitude that we should have, in which when we deal with people who he has put in authority over us. This attitude that we should have, where we recognize, respect those in charge. Now, again, I know that that's hard to hear, but if you're hearing this and you have this feeling like, well, I'm going to tune out now, I want to encourage you to kind of stick around and listen through point two, especially when we hit point three, because hopefully then it'll all begin to make sense. But again, the direction that Paul gives us is clear. There's really no way to wrestle with the text. It's not controversial because it's a controversial thing to try to understand of the Greek and the Hebrew and the way that it goes together and exactly what it means. What Paul means is straightforward. The reason why it's controversial is we don't like hearing it. We're uncomfortable with hearing things about how we are to be people in subjection, how we should be listening to authorities, regardless of what that is. And a lot of the reason for that is simply our rebellious nature. We don't like being told that people are in charge of us. We don't like being told that we should listen. We don't like being told that we should respect people, even sometimes when we feel like they're not worthy of respect. We don't like being told those things. But that's the place Paul starts. He starts out and he tells us the attitude that we should have as Christians. This is the attitude that we should have towards our parents. This is the attitude we should have towards our elders and pastors. This is the attitude that we're supposed to have towards the authorities. And again, that is difficult to hear. So if you're willing to keep going with me, second thing we see in Paul is we see the actions that we should take as Christians. How do we engage a society that in some areas seem to be steering completely out of control? Now, how do we deal with a government that seems to be not for our best or that seems to be screwing things up in our minds? Let me read verses 3 and 4, and hopefully that gives us a little bit of direction. Verses 3 and 4 says, "The rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval, for he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out the wrath of God on the wrongdoer. Now, when you kind of pull apart verse 3 and 4, essentially what Paul is saying is the first thing he says in verse 1 and 2 to Christians, he says, should be people under authority. Now, you should be people who are under authority. That's one of the ways that you live out your life as a Christian in the midst of a government, a society, a state, is first of all, be in subjection. That means respect. That means recognizing people in power. That means treating them accordingly. Second thing he says, as in terms of our responsibility as believers, is he says the second thing is we are to do good. And we see that in verse 3. He says, for rulers are not a terror to good conduct. Essentially, what he's telling us is he's telling us that it's better for us and that we have a responsibility as Christians, as believers, as people of the state. We have a responsibility to simply do what's good. And that's kind of what it boils down to. Verses 3 and 4, he says, if you do what's good, then it's not going to be a problem for you. If you do what's evil, then it's going to cause problems for you. And so Paul is challenging them. He's reminding them that as believers, it's not just positive, having a positive attitude towards the world, having a positive attitude towards the governing authorities, towards the state. It's also doing positive things in the world. That as a Christian, we should take it as our moral obligation, as our spiritual obligation, to do what is good and what is right, no matter what that means. One of the things that I want you to understand is one of the questions that comes up is when Paul's talking about these ways in which we are to interact with government, is he talking about, what about if we are in a situation where we're under an authoritarian regime or evil leadership? What should we do then? If they tell us to do this that's sinful and it's evil, should we do it? Well, Paul gives the answer here. Paul would say no. Paul would say even if you live under those situations, God's direction is still clear. Do good. And that seems like a simple answer, but it's actually very, very detailed, isn't it? Means in the midst of a government in which we agree with, or one which is completely evil, our responsibility is the same. Even if we grow up in the midst of a terrible regime that does evil and wants its people to do evil, God's people are to do what is good, what is right. And the good that and right that he's talking about isn't the good and right for me, it's the good and right for everyone. It's a common good, it's a moral good, it's a societal good. And basically what Paul is reminding the people of is that Christians should be a positive force for good in whatever society they find themselves in. Whatever society they find themselves in, Christians should be a positive force for good in that society to such a degree that that becomes influential. And I'll tell you very honestly, that's one of the ways in which Christians genuinely can have a deep impact in a society, in a nation. There's actually a period, I'm older than most of you, so most of you probably don't know this or didn't live through this, but when I was in high school, when I was in college, essentially the American Christian conservative side of the country decided to put together what they called the moral majority. And basically, there was a lot of Christians who said, well, we as Christians need to live out our Christian faith by telling the government what they should be doing. So we are going to, if you're a Christian, you should be in politics, you should run for positions, you should get into places of influence, we should lobby the government, we should do all these different things to make the government do what is good and right. And we will have rallies, we will, gather people together on the grassroots. And essentially what they thought was we should infiltrate the government to change the society. So take positions, lobby, influence. And when we can influence government that way, then the government will see that they have to craft and design and work out a society which is filled with God. I hate to tell you this, but it didn't really work out that way, did it? I mean, we're in 2015, and I don't think we're any more religious, any more moral than we were back then. Matter of fact, you can make case we're vastly worse. What a lot of the political science people said after about 10 or 15 years of doing this is that it doesn't work. And the reason why is because we can infiltrate government, we can take positions, but government is just the tail. It's not really the thing that changes everything. You know, society will still do what it does, and politics just kind of follows behind. So the question is this: what can we as Christians do to change things? What can we as Christians do to change, to influence a nation, a government, a people? Paul's suggestion is that we as Christians should be the strongest force for good in our society. And if we simply commit ourselves to doing what is good, then that is transformative for our society and for our government. You know, one of the things that you begin to realize when you go through history is you begin to realize that there are lots of times where there is civil disobedience, where there is revolutions, where there is violent change. And you could make the case that in all those situations, things have really changed. They really don't. Violence, civil disobedience, you know, all those different things that, you know, civil unrest and negative protests and demands, all those things, they might win out and get people to believe their idea, but they further deepen the divides in people. Even if they get across their platform, and even if they get across their ideas, they further divide people. And if you think about it, the really powerful changes in society have been through, you know, through nonviolence, or been through things where, you know, where it hasn't been violent revolutions. You know, one of the people that everyone points to is someone like Gandhi. And you know, they look and they see, you know, how much, peaceful means really does transform things. You know, one of the things that we see in the early church is we see in the early church the big differences, the big steps that were made weren't through violent opposition. It was through people simply living their faith out, wanting to do good. Matter of fact, there's one person who wrote about this, Justin the Martyr. We simply know him as Justin Martyr. And he was fighting at a time where there was persecution happening in the Christian church. And he wrote this wonderful, wonderful letter, basically arguing why Christians are better citizens than anyone else in Roman society. And basically, his argument was based on certain things. But essentially, at the end of the day, he said, Christians are more committed to do what is good and right for everyone than anyone else is in our society. And so, writing to the authorities, he said, Christians pray for the leaders. They pray for Caesar. They pray for the governors. They pray for the people who are in charge. And they're constantly trying to do good. And that was his argument. His argument was that the reason why things should change, or the reason why they should stop persecuting Christians, because Christians were a positive force in the world. And you know, that's what Paul is talking about. He's talking about the fact that Christians should be a positive force for good in society. And when Christians are, that begins to influence, that begins to make a decision, that begins to sway things one way or the other. Now, again, one of the questions comes up, which is, well, then are you saying that we shouldn't stand up, we shouldn't seek change? And I would say that the Bible doesn't tell us not to. Bible, because we're told to do good, I think the answer to that is yes, we should stand up, we should seek change, but not the change for our sake. We should be willing to stand, to want to see things changed, to see things that are good, and to do things that are good for others. Standing up for the right causes at the right times. And again, I can't give you a lot of detail on that, but again, you know, when Paul talks about this, he wants us to be a positive force in society. So what does that mean? What does that look like? I think there's a lot of ways we understand we shouldn't, you know, I think it means that as Christians, we shouldn't be creating civil unrest. It means that we shouldn't be creating civil disobedience. If we protest, there should be ways in which we are doing them in a way that are positive and not negative. Ways in which we are interacting with things that are, again, are positive and not negative. But again, Paul doesn't give us a ton of details for that. What he does do at the very end, though, is he does tell us the reason why, and this is really what I wanted to end with. The reason why Paul talks about all of these issues this way is actually very simple. There's two parts to it. If you look all throughout the passage, he says the reason why you can simply subject yourself to the authorities and do what is good is for two reasons. One, God's sovereignty. Number two, God's authority. You know, one of the deep concerns we have that makes us want to get up and protest, that makes us want to stand up and shout something or do something, is that we all of us have this deep concern that if we're not careful, we could become very quickly powerless and voiceless. You know, and that's one thing we fear about government. That's one of the things we fear about authority. We fear authority that will squash us, that will, you know, take away our voice, that will step over us, that will minimize us. And the reason why people go out and they demonstrate, the reason why they create civil unrest is because they want to make sure that in some ways they can have a voice, they can have power, they can say something and do something that affects change somewhere, that it makes a difference. What Paul says, though, is he says, as a Christian, we have these two things. We have God's sovereignty and God's authority. In other words, Paul is reminding us that even though at the very base of it, we worry about feeling powerless and voiceless, he reminds us that we have a power and a voice that is far greater than any of us could imagine. Matter of fact, when you begin to read through this, you can't get through a verse without hearing this concept of authority, God's authority and God's sovereignty in here. If you go to verse 1, he says, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God." So here's this picture in which, you know, we are to listen to the authorities, but there's an authority above them. There is another authority who oversees them. There's another authority who has put them in place, and he is our true authority. You know, you go to verse 2, he says, "Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed." So again, this picture of there are these authorities over you, but God is over them. You know, you get into verse 3 and 4, he talks about doing good or doing what is evil. And he says that the government, that the authorities will come down on you, for they are servants of God, an avenger who carries out wrath. And in verse 5, he says, "Therefore, one must be in subjection not only to avoid wrath, but for the sake of conscience." He brings in this idea that God sees and that God is acting through these things. And then in verse 6, again, he says, you know, these authorities are ministers of God attending to this very thing. All throughout the passage, Paul is reminding us, you know, that our ultimate authority is God, and that God is sovereign over everything in our world. You know, that he is above all and that nothing happens outside of his view. Now, just to make that clear, does that mean that everything that happens is approved by God? Absolutely not. There are things that happen that God doesn't want to happen. We live in a fallen world. A fallen world means that everything doesn't fit what God would desire. But it does mean that everything is under his control. Again, does it mean that all rulers are godly? No, obviously, we know that that's not the case. But we know that even when evil rulers are in place, God is still in control of the entire situation. You know, all throughout the passage, Paul connects worldly authority to God's authority, and he constantly reminds us that even if we are under poor worldly authority, we are always in his hands. And you see, all of a sudden, how we interact or deal with government, with society, Paul is telling us that it's not about trusting the president or trusting the ones who make laws or the justice system. Ultimately, for us as believers, about trusting God. And the more we can trust that God is in control, the more we can trust that God is the authority above the authorities, then we can continue to do good, and we can place ourselves under the subjection of the people who've been put over us. Again, that's a very difficult thing to hear, but God doesn't just tell us this, he shows us it. Now, we do have an example of what this looks like, and the example is this. When you look at Jesus, Jesus went before the authorities. He submitted himself to the civil authorities. If you remember the Sanhedrin, Roman authority, Jesus was brought before both of them. And if anyone could have said, "Do you know who I am?" It's Jesus. But what Jesus chose to do is he chose to submit himself to civil authority. He placed himself under their care. And if you look at Jesus, instead of instigating, instead of protesting, instead of calling, for the heads of everyone who is a part of these trials and these decisions, Jesus, like a lamb led to slaughter, went to the cross. And one of the amazing things that you begin to realize when you look at the cross is you begin to realize that the reason why the cross is so powerful is because inherently, from the very beginning to the very end, Jesus entrusted himself not to the authorities, but to the true authority. He entrusted himself to God. And only when you entrust yourself to God like that, and only when you see that Jesus has entrusted himself, even though it led to his death, only when you see that Jesus went to his death, but that God used that for our good, only then will you ever begin to trust God. What Paul is talking about all through Romans chapter 1 through 7 is that you might live in a place where there are evil authorities in place, where there are people wanting to do harm, wanting to do active evil. But if you're a Christian, God's message is you always have one who is over them, wanting and willing to do good. And as long as you can trust that, as long as you can trust that, then you can live your life properly. One of the wonderful things that we get to do today is we get to take the Lord's Supper.